Yes, I was going to take you there because in the book you speak to the Russian element of the 9/11 story, so I think that's where you're going. So
yeah, and then of course that's the famous chapter. Angel is next. Angel is next is the most important piece of evidence in the whole thing,
because that's the
moment where the invisible government speaks. And once Bush hears that, he's got to run to Barksdale, B-52 base, Night Watch base, and then he's got to run on to the SAC base at Offutt, Nebraska. The Putin-Bush conversation. Now, imagine what this conversation says. Bush says, we're under attack by terrorists. Putin thinks you're under attack by your own rogue network. And as a KGB veteran, it's the most obvious thing in the world. Putin sent out his Air Force chief a couple of days later to say what the U.S. government claims for 9/11 is impossible. Couldn't be done. Right? They'd be discovered within minutes if this were really what they say it was.
Yeah.
So Bush says we're under attack by terrorists. It's Bin Laden and company, and you know Putin is struggling not to laugh. But then Bush then says we are going to invade Afghanistan. Now remember the Russians, the Soviets invested a lot of dead Red Army people in trying to keep Afghanistan from becoming a threat to them, because it easily can.
Yeah.
And that was a whole war that went on for almost 10 years. So, and Bush then says, not only are we going to invade Afghanistan, but we are going to seize bases in the former Soviet republics of Central Asia, right, in Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, maybe Kazakhstan, maybe Turkmenistan. We're going to go massively into those five former Soviet republics of Central Asia. Now, at that point, Bush has essentially got an ultimatum to Putin saying, we're going to come barging into your sphere. Suppose at that point Putin says, if you do any of that, I will incinerate New York with H-bombs. You stay out of there. I'll blow your head off.
Yeah.
There has to be, and of course Bush doesn't know what to do at that point, there has to be for the rogue network the point of saying, if there is escalation, we can have our own escalation, not by going through Bush, who may dither, but by going through that back door that we described in the Global Guardian. The other aspect of it is, Bush was told by different people, told by Tony Blair, told by Richard Clark, told by a group of, these scoundrels who were essentially in on it, telling Bush, you've got to go on television and say, Bin Laden did it, Al-Qaeda did it, and now we're going to exact revenge.
Yeah.
Suppose Bush says, I can't do it. Suppose Bush becomes catatonic. Suppose Bush has a nervous breakdown, gets out his bottle of Jack Daniels, and just goes to pieces.
Yeah.
What do they do then? They've got to have, again, they've got to have some way. Their ultimatum to Bush is to say, you, Bush, will launch the war of civilizations in conventional terms, starting with Afghanistan and then proceeding to Iraq, Syria, Iran, or we, the invisible government network, the rogues, we'll launch it in nuclear terms. We can blow up all those cities. We don't need to wait for this laborious process of conventional forces. So that's the centerpiece, and the Global Guardian is the key to that entire thing, because it shows you directly where the back door was that they could have gone through.
So that was like their plan B if Bush didn't capitulate on.
Yes, exactly. I don't believe. I think it's very naive to think that anybody would have told Bush the details of something so important as this in advance. He can't be relied on. He might talk. He might have a nervous breakdown. They simply put him in this situation, and they say, it's time for you to turn the government over to the invisible government, and of course he does it, and that's his big sin, if you will.
Yeah, I thought you got that across really well in the book when you said a lot of people are stuck on the detail and think that it's Bush knew when it's more Bush surrendered.
Bush knew nothing. How could Bush know anything? Yeah, Bush surrendered. Bush capitulated. Bush, and then, of course, he became an enthusiastic proponent because he saw how well this worked and how much he enjoyed it. He's come to just love it. All right. Now, let's just take a couple of other examples just so people get this idea, because this is the main thing. These people who tell you they let it happen on purpose, they're blinding you to the main danger that we have in the world today, which is that terrorism comes through your own government. It's state-sponsored government terrorism through your own government.
Yeah.
A couple of examples. When I wrote this unauthorized biography of George Bush the Elder, 1992. One of the things you have to deal with is the attempt by Hinckley to assassinate Reagan in 1981, so John Hinckley Jr. And, of course, the obvious thing is that Scott Hinckley, the elder brother of the would-be assassin, was in close personal contact with Neil Bush, Silverado Neil Bush, who today is profiteering somewhere. He's doing influence peddling and so forth somewhere in the world, and we just heard about him a couple of weeks ago. So on the day after Reagan was supposed to die, Scott Hinckley and Neil Bush were supposed to have a dinner meeting. And this was suppressed by all the networks.
Yeah.
And, it's hard to find except in my book. But my book is easy to find, so I guess that makes it fairly easy to find on the Internet. So you have all this. The other thing, though, the reason I'm bringing this up now is on the day after the attempted assassination of Reagan, there was a presidential succession drill scheduled, nine lives.
Another drill.
And it simply means that for those who were on the inside, who had that extra code word, the preparations for the hit on Reagan were conducted through this Nine Lives presidential succession drill. So you go from a hypothetical presidential succession drill almost to a real one.
Yeah.
Couple of other examples, just in general, very general historical terms. Operation Mongoose, this is a sort of judoing drill. Operation Mongoose was supposed to be the CIA's attempt to kill Castro. I think it's pretty clear in retrospect that a lot of the work to kill Kennedy was actually conduited through that drill. So you could have the criminal officer sitting next to the loyal one. The loyal one looks over and says, shooting in Dallas, or shooting, at somebody in a city. Yeah, that's the plan that we're going to get Castro in Havana 3 months from now. And, of course, it's not. It's Dallas in November 63. All right, now let's get up to July 7th of this past year, London, right? London 7-7. Here you have some bombs going off in the London subway, the underground, at the same time that the Group of Eight meeting is going on in Glen Eagle, Scotland. So you have all world leaders in Britain, on British territory. So you look at this and you say, what's the preparation here? So you soon find three exercises. They're called Atlantic Blue by the British, Top Off 3, Top Off meaning top officials, for the U.S., and Triple Play for Canada. And the scenario is bombs in the London subway at the same time that there's an important international meeting in Britain, and the meeting is subjected to a bio attack. That doesn't seem to have happened.
Yeah.
Unless it was Bush's attack when he crashed his bicycle into the policeman there. That also went on. And then, so that's the general aegis under which all this was done. More specifically, then you get Visor Associates with Peter Power. Peter Power comes on BBC Five that same evening and says, oh my gosh, we were running a simulation of bombs in the London subway at pretty much those stations, pretty much those times, and it went off.
Yeah.
It's not clear what this guy was doing. And maybe he was a criminal who wanted to cover himself. Maybe he was not witting. Maybe he was a dupe.
That was quite a bungle on his part.
We don't know. No, it's
well, not
hard
necessarily,
to say.
Right? Yeah.
We don't know
what he's doing.
It's a bungle, maybe, but none of this, nothing has happened to him as far as I know. You don't know because he might be a dupe. In other words, there are different levels of awareness of this thing.
Yeah.
Some people know they're in a drill. Some people don't. Some people know the drill is going to go live. Some people don't. Some people don't know to what extent. And remember, they always say we're going to make these drills as realistic as possible. Let's just look maybe at one more.
Okay.
We had a workshop here in Washington, D.C. at the Truth Convergence in American University at the end of July. And we had a workshop where I tried and Nico Haupt tried and some other people tried to make clear what this stuff was all about. So we set up a monitoring group, and let me mention now what this monitoring group is, because this is what I invite people. I invite you to join and anybody else that hears this. You can go to a website called Team 8 Plus, TEAM, the number 8, PLUS.org, I believe. That's one. And then there's that's sort of the encyclopedic version. And then there's one called total411.info. So TOTAL, the number is 411, right? Information,
yep.
.info. this is sort of the mass market. This is sort of the tabloid version, put it that way. One is the detailed version. One is the high impact version. And we began monitoring these things. TeamMate Plus had been doing it before, but we began doing this with a full awareness that the job for essentially from July through January now was essentially to try to frustrate the attempt to start military actions under the cover of a new 9/11. And it goes back to the famous column by Philip Giraldi in the American Conservative magazine back at the end of July, which said, Cheney has given orders to the Pentagon, be ready for the nuclear attack on Iran, and get ready to do it in the wake of a new 9/11. So that simply means Cheney and company, Cheney's masters, are preparing a new 9/11, and they're not going to wait. And they're not going to wait and let it happen on purpose and hope that it happens. They're going to make sure it does. So the question, therefore, became: let's look at drills that seem to lend themselves to being transformed. And of course, most drills do. One of the things you have to do is sometimes you get so many drills you can't even follow them all. But
yeah.
The one thing, as I suggested on 9/11, if you have one day where there are 13-plus drills going on, that's a danger.
Yeah.
In other words, it's the number of drills by itself can be a giveaway to what's happening. And that means in the coming couple of weeks in November, you better hold on to your hat. During the summer, though, just to fill in this part, the way we were able to do this.
Is this the August August. Yeah.
So this was done especially by 411 Info using material from also from Team 8 Plus, and the notion here was we found out that there was Sudden Response 05 is a drill scheduled for Charleston, South Carolina, and the scenario is this: it's supposed to be a Homeland Security preparedness drill. And it says, a group of terrorists bring a 10-kiloton nuclear device to Charleston, South Carolina, set it off, and we have to drill. How do we respond to this?
Oh, boy.
Now, this is a drill you don't want to have.
Yeah.
What's the point of having such a drill? It's obviously terrorist propaganda. It's to terrorize people. It's terrorist demagogy. It only helps Bush and company, right, with their lying demagogy. It's expensive. It's obviously it's inconvenient. We can talk about this in a minute, and it can go live. That's the main thing. So thanks to Total 411 in particular, a hue and cry was raised in Charleston, South Carolina. People got really upset because they thought again they recognized that there was a certain possibility that this would turn out to be real. You never know, but you don't want to find out by letting it happen. You want to denounce it, you want to expose it, you want to shut it down, not in my backyard, not with my money, not on my time, and so forth. So
so when people ask what they can do, they should be going to those websites, they should be trying to find out about these drills.
Exactly, and I find some people have written me emails saying, what are you talking about? Important drills would not be on websites. They are.
Well, where do you find them?
Well, I'll give you some examples. One is to go to Teammate Plus, and you can find some lists. Now, let me just tell you, what I have here in front of me right now is a slideshow.
Mm-hmm.
This is from a link. You can get it on Teammate Plus, and this is a U.S. STRATCOM joint exercise briefing, and this gets me to the heart of the matter right now. And here I go to page 4. It's a PowerPoint presentation that you can download.
Yeah.
So they essentially give you the entire array of important military drills, the big ones, for fiscal 2005. Now, don't get confused. Fiscal goes to the end of September. October 1st is a new fiscal year. So we're now in fiscal 06. So if we look back to fiscal 05, we see, and they have them color-coded, some of them are from NORTHCOM, some of them are from STRATCOM.
Yeah.
NORTHCOM is the troops in the North America. STRATCOM is the nuclear forces, SOCOM, special forces, SOUTHCOM, UCOM, PACCOM, right, different parts of the world with their arrogance that they think they cover the whole world. So in 2005, you can see that these drills and exercises are spread out more or less uniformly through the year. In other words, at any given time, there might be one or two or three. They're probably concentrated a bit towards the middle of the year. But now when we go to 2006, where we are now, we see that for the October-November time frame, and there's a huge block of them that take place now in October-November.
Oh, wow.
The headline of it is Positive Response. Positive Response is an interoperability drill run by the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and it's their sort of overarching coordination of everything drill.
Oh, boy.
In other words, the whole military, constellation.
Yeah.
Everything they have has to be coordinated, right down to the Coast Guard and everything, National Guard, everything.
Yeah.
But then under that gets really scary. We have Global Lightning 06. As soon as you have global, you know, this means STRATCOM. This means the strategic nuclear forces.
Yeah.
And then there's one called Global Storm 06. Now, Global Storm, this is already scary. Up until now, I was telling you about Global Guardian, 9/11.
Yeah.
Global Guardian had a short code abbreviation called Charlie Echo, CE, when you look in older documents. But now, in starting last year, meaning starting a couple of months ago, because they just had one global storm, they're now having a second global storm, they've changed Global Guardian into Global Storm, and it still bears this Charlie Echo code name. So what is this? Well, behind the scenes, of course, there has been this transformation of the U.S. military doctrine from deterrence to what they call global strike, which I call worldwide nuclear sneak attack at any moment.
Oh, boy.
And I think what they've done, therefore, is instead of saying this somewhat comforting Global Guardian, they're making it into Global Storm, because the idea is whatever it's going to be is preemptive attack, preemptive sneak attack, whatever you want to...
First strike,
absolutely, including nuclear weapons as a prominent option.
Yeah.
So they call this Global Storm 06. And, of course, Desert Shield occupying Saudi Arabia, Desert Storm attacking Kuwait, bombing Iraq, so forth. Then, as if that weren't enough, we have another one in that same block called Busy Night Seminars. Busy, as soon as you have the code word busy, and I'm quoting here from William Arkin's codename book that people have to essentially get or consult at the library, demand that your library get it. Busy night, they say busy night seminars. I doubt they're seminars. Busy means nuclear. And then underneath that one, there's another one called Vigilant Shield 06 that's going to be run by NORTHCOM. Now let's look for a second at Vigilant Shield 06. Another source that you can look at if you want to catch up on these things is William Arkin, the guy that I'm mentioning.
Yep.
He writes a column for the Washington Post called Early Warning.
Oh, boy.
And a recent one, October 21st, I have to tell you, I've been emailing him everything I got to try to challenge him to say something about this, because we want him to go faster, right, because he can get articles published. And
Is he not part of...
I don't know.
Oh, you don't know what his take on 9/11
is? Whatever it is, I mean, you have to, you engage and then you see.
Yeah.
You don't know. There's no way to know a priori. Maybe maybe he's an agent who doesn't want to die.
Yeah, exactly.
Could be anything.
Yeah.
So here's the story.
Okay.
It's a classified military exercise starting November 1st, and this is called Vigilant Shield, I believe. Let's see if we have it. It's Vigilant Shield. So on November 1st, the country of Purple, or better yet, Purple, not known if it's a country or a terrorist network, is going to attack the U.S. How will they attack? It's going to be a radiological dirty bomb in Mobile, Alabama. Mobile docks, Mobile Bay.
Okay.
Reminds us of Sudden Response 05, where they wanted to have 10 kilotons in Charleston, South Carolina.
Exactly, yeah.
And I don't know if I got to the end of that story. There was such a hue and cry, thanks to Global 411 info, that the local newspaper had to reassure people, and it looks like that drill was canceled.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? So this time, it's Alabama, and radiological dirty bomb. So they've got to clean up for that. But then there's also got to be the retaliation part. So Vigilant Shield is one part, and then we get into Global Lightning that I just mentioned.
Yeah.
So Global Lightning is a U.S. nuclear attack on North Korea. Purple is described as a Northeast Asian nation with nuclear weapons. Sounds like North Korea. Could be China. You don't know.
Exactly.
Could be anything. These are neocon fascist madmen. The sky's the limit. So with global lightning, the scenario here is that North Korea fires IRBMs, intermediate-range ballistic missiles. The Pentagon deploys U.S. ABM, anti-ballistic missile systems, against them. In the meantime, behind the lines, Vigilant Shield is going on. Vigilant Shield, therefore, looks like continuity of government, military coup, herding people into concentration camps, whatever you want, could easily be subsumed under that. We're going to have drills by which Russian bombers enter Canadian and U.S. airspace, consequence management, ABM defenses, cyber warfare, terrorism, nuclear launch, information warfare, global strike is included, nuclear combat readiness, proficiency and training.
So just a host of drills.
Right, and it's all under CONPLAN 8022-22, which I reported about earlier in the year. That was the one that we found out about in May, which is it's the detailed plan by which the U.S. shifts to nuclear first strike. There was a global lightning held last year, October 2004, Barksdale Air Force Base, Shreveport. Their 13 B-52s took off within less than 1 minute of each other. So 13 minutes... 13 B-52s in the air. So there's also an element here that they're going back to some kind of strip alert for the B-52s. This is not clear. Remember, there used to be B-52s kept in the air, right, flying around in circles.
Yeah.
They may be now getting to some form of enhanced readiness for B-52s to be able to carry out the global strike, which is their goal. Now, that means that all of this is taking place, and wait a minute, there's even more. Yeah, let me just get back to this. In addition to positive response, global lightning, global storm, busy night seminars, Vigilant Shield, we've also got Able Warrior. Now, this is another important one. Able Warrior is the Special Forces Command. That's in November, so that's now also. Now, this is the biggest worldwide anti-terror drill. War on Terror, using special forces. Now, Able Warrior sounds like, well, it's defense, right, in theory. Defense against terror. Okay. Remember Able Danger. Able Danger is this group of people. They came forward in August under the sponsorship of Congressman Weldon of Pennsylvania. So we had this guy Schaefer and this guy Philpott from the DIA, Defense Intelligence Agency. They come forward and say, we were the people who were tracking Atta and the other 9/11 terrorists, and we can tell you that Atta was in the U.S. in the first 2 or 3 months of 2000, and we told the Kane-Hamilton Commission about this, but they ignored us. Remember this?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Able Danger. Now, the other things we know about Able Danger is that there have been attempted hearings on this, and the Pentagon has forbidden these characters to show up. More important, Weldon has come forward and said that the Able Danger group, sometime several years ago, the Able Danger destroyed their own records, their own files. They had 2.5 terabytes of files, equal to one quarter of the entire huge Library of Congress, biggest library in the world, and they destroyed that. Now, my guess is the following. Weldon said in his original statement that the purpose of Able Danger was to observe and manipulate terror groups. As soon as it says manipulate, those guys are terrorist controllers.
Yeah.
Those are case officers. They're not observing Atta. Atta is a double agent who has to report to somebody. He's reporting to Able Danger. And if you look at the strange kinds of symmetries that they build into this terminology of theirs, right? Able Warrior, Able Danger. It sounds like Able Warrior is the defense and Able Danger is the attack.
Yeah.
So it's perfectly feasible, in my view, that Able Warrior is Special Forces Command defending, whereas Able Danger is the cover for it in the computer systems of the bureaucracy is that Able Danger is the simulated attack that turns out to be real.
Yeah.
So this, in other words, you've got to have some point in this bureaucracy where the actual patsies, right, these pathetic psychotic double agents, patsies, dupes, fanatics, the stable of characters that they have. Somebody's got to manage them and look after them. That might very well have been Able Danger. And before I forget, Terminal Fury 06 starts in December. That's biological and chemical in the Pacific. So that's a combination, therefore, of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different drills that are going on pretty much right now. But before you get too complacent, because that doesn't sound like 13 plus, does it? Let's just look in the Arkin book for a second, which I have here. Let's look up under Global Guardian, which is Global Storm now, right? Global Guardian, yeah, in the good old days of 9/11. So now we find in this book by Arkin, in his article on Global Guardian, Global Guardian is held in cooperation with Amalgam Warrior, Apollo Bronze, Apollo Guardian, Crown Vigilance, Vigilant Guardian, Vigilant Overview.
So that's six more.
So that's six more. So what does that get us up to?
13.
Gets us up to, does he get us up to 13?
Yeah, he said 7, 6,
well,
13.
Well, then no, we're up to 13. So that seems to be rather
frightening.
Rather frightening. And
yeah,
this is exactly the time. We've got to have Senator Byrd or somebody has got to get up in the Congress and say, we don't want to have, we want to call off these drills. This happens, right? When even on 9/11, the Soviet, the Russians, were supposedly having their own strategic bomber drill, and Armitage at the State Department, he claims to have been successful in convincing the Russians to cancel their drill because the time was not right. Now, if the time was ever wrong to have all these drills, it's now.
Yeah, because we've got a situation where the neocons, their backs against the wall, and the heat's turning up on them with all these scandals. And then also now we have the opening here with these drills to sort of make a lot of that go away in their minds and institute some kind of martial law situation and all
exactly.
The whole break loose.
The one hypothesis is simply a wag the dog, right? It's just done at the level of demagogy and publicity, how to control the TV agenda. And then, of course, if it gets really serious, as you say, it gets into this martial law, concentration camps, roundups, and things like this.
Yeah, so it's either it could serve both purposes, like a smokescreen, and also to advance their agenda, because
right,
they want to go further into the Middle East and beyond.
Exactly. So there you have to think about two variations. One is the new 9/11. One is that, I'll just try to use another example to cite this. In New York City during August, there was something called the gas dispersion drill. And the rationale for this was, they said, oh, we want to know if poisonous gases are released in Manhattan, where will they blow? So they set up 4 gas dispensers in Manhattan, and they were putting out what they claimed was an inert gas.
Yeah.
The environmentalists were very upset because their research showed that this so-called inert gas was going to remain present. It would not break down for 3,000 years, I believe. It was maybe a half-life or maybe more. So they were very upset. And, of course, the easiest thing in the world is you can have everybody in the drill is perfectly loyal, except one,
yep,
who comes along and he says, let's take that inert gas out, and here we have potassium cyanide going in, and let's see where that goes,
yeah,
and see how many it kills. And then you've got a huge massacre and a tremendous tragedy, and you've probably got the Third World War on your hands. So my thesis is these drills are going on around us all the time now.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to be shut down. We don't need them.
Yeah.
The BBC says Al-Qaeda is a myth. I say Al-Qaeda is the CIA Arab Legion. But whether you think it's a myth or whether you think it's a deployment of the CIA and company and MI6 and the Mossad, these things have got to be shut down. They're expensive. They cause traffic jams. They're terrorizing people. And above all, they can turn into something absolutely horrendous. And if you go on, by the way, these drills, you know, I didn't give you the whole story for fiscal 06, but just for the first sort of trimester, right, October, November, December, that seems to be the heart of the matter. And the reason that is dangerous is this corresponds to a couple of things, and we can probably wrap up with this.
Okay.
I had identified back several months ago, the danger is the period October 15th through December 15th, October 15th being the Iraqi constitutional referendum and December 15th being the first parliamentary vote under that, because the Pentagon had said that they were going to increase their forces. They were going to have what they called a plus-up of 30,000 extra people in Iraq.
Oh, wow.
And it turns out that what they did was they moved the entire 101st Airborne Division over there for the fifth time in the history of the division that it's ever gone anyplace altogether. Probably, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, I don't know what else there is, but this is the fifth, so four times before, and now the fifth. The 82nd Airborne Division, significant parts of that are in Iraq and or Afghanistan. The British announced at the end of September, the British said they had been planning to remove people from Iraq. They were going to keep everybody there, and they were going to send their 7th Armored Brigade, the so-called Desert Rats. So you've got the shock troops over there that you need for such an attack. The war plan would be something like this. It would not be to seize land and occupy it, create democracy. It would simply be a punitive expedition, go into Iran with nuclear bombs and or conventional bombs, but also use paratrooper special forces to seize nuclear reactors, nuclear enrichment facilities, university laboratories, research reactors, faculties, things like this, and destroy them also with demolitions people going down into the tunnel systems, finding the targets, placing the charges manually, so to speak, and then blowing them up, and then get out. And the you can see if you put Bernard Lewis plan into a search engine, you'll probably be directed to a map of what the plan is that I've put up for Iran. Instead of having Iran, they want to split it up. They're looking in particular, the U.S. and the British want to detach pretty much the entire coast of the Gulf, including the Karg Island tanker terminal, many of the oil fields.
Yeah.
They call that Arabistan or Khuzestan or Akvas. There was just a meeting this week at the American Enterprise Institute. That same Michael Ledeen that I mentioned had a seminar with representatives of these ethnic groups on the unknown Iran, which is to say, don't think that just Persians live there. You've got Azeris, you've got Baluchis, you've got Tajiks, you've got Armenians, you've got Arabs, you've got five or six different ethnic groups. They all want national self-determination. So the idea is that Iran, according to this scenario, would be broken up, and the Iranistan would be a Persian landlocked island in the middle of what is now the country, after Arabistan, Azerbaijan, Turkmenistan, Baluchistan, and some others had all seceded or been broken off. So
they want to break up Iran.
To destroy Iran in the same way that they've destroyed Iraq. And the Bernard Lewis plan, of course, is a general Balkanization plan for the Middle East. And I guess the last thing to say is if you doubt that the U.S. and the British do state-sponsored terrorism, you have to look at the bombs that have been going off in October in precisely this area of Khuzestan, Arabistan, in other words, the Persian Gulf coast of Iran. The Iranians say that they have caught terrorists blowing up the Abadan refineries, or parts of them, blowing up different targets in towns, killing 5 people. These people, they caught one or two of these terrorists. The terrorists say, we were trained by the British in Basra. And, of course, we had, just in the last couple of months, we've had some members of the British Special Air Services caught driving a car bomb around Basra. They were obviously going to blow it up and blame it on, the resistance. It's a typical British Frank Kitson low-intensity operations counter-gang tradition to try to, if you want to discredit a national liberation movement, you go out and create atrocities in their names. And I think the general notion, and this is what the Iranians say, and I think many people have seen it now, that Zarqawi and some of the worst atrocities have actually been carried out by U.S. British military intelligence using these pawns. For just the idea that Zarqawi says, we're going to go out and kill Shiites, what kind of sense does that make? That just discredits you. It promotes a civil war. It takes some of the heat off the U.S. and the British and prepares the destruction of the country. So it's state-sponsored terrorism up and down the line. If they're willing to do it over there, I don't think there's any reason to think that they wouldn't do it here. So
now, what do you think they're going to need an event here as a precursor to sort of swing the public into going along with this motion into Iran, or are they not even going to care? And just
I think something like that will be needed, because especially if you want to have a nuclear attack on Iran, and if you want to have a punitive expedition of this type. And you've also got now, I think, a considerable wave of rage against Bush because of all the different things, the hurricane, the gas prices, the Iraq war, and the wag the dog theory. I mean, I think it's very useful just to call into radio talk shows. That's what I would urge people to do. Call into any radio talk show you can, from Limbaugh and Hannity down to the local neo-fascist who calls himself a conservative. And just say, you know, this is now a wag the dog situation. Keep Bush's finger away from the nuclear button. Keep Cheney's finger away from the nuclear button. Don't give them the launch codes. Keep the football out of Bush's hands. He's incompetent. I think if you have somebody as hated and discredited as Bush who wants to start this, they almost have to think of some new 9/11 and on a larger scale. Theoretically, though, this could also be done through some kind of Gulf of Tonkin incident or blowing up the Maine. Blowing up the Maine might be sinking an aircraft carrier in the Persian Gulf and blaming it on Iran. That would, of course, cause extensive losses and might be just the thing to get this all going. And I think maybe after hearing all this, and I hope I haven't gone on too long, but
don't worry about it.
The notion is that you can see the shame of the left gatekeepers, the shame of LIHOP, if you will, the shame of those who still say, well, I have unanswered questions. The great task here is to educate people beyond the unanswered questions and beyond the obvious absurdity of LIHOP into the full invisible government MIHOP, not even Bush-Cheney MIHOP, because that won't do it either. All of this can happen with Bush-Cheney or without them.
Yeah.
They're expendable. The invisible government goes on and on. And also, one of the other things that people have to realize is this is not Mossad MIHOP. That is absurd. The Mossad cannot suppress U.S. air defenses for 2 hours on the morning of September 11th.
Exactly.
It's terror made in USA. It comes directly out of the bowels of this military bureaucracy. Obviously, there's plenty of room for subcontractors. In my book, I show the MI6. The British are by far the leaders. The Mossad may get into the act, but there's less proof about that than there is about MI6. So if you want to get in a lather about somebody, make it the British MI6, because they are up to their necks. So the whole point is you've got to educate world public opinion to the point where this stuff doesn't work. In other words, in order to remove this tremendous gullibility and manipulability of world public opinion, people have got to be educated about what terrorism is, so that if a bomb goes off, somebody doesn't say, you know, what guy in a turban living in a cave did it, but Cheney did it.
Yeah.
Cheney and Cheney's masters. Just maybe one last note, maybe just a couple of sort of current events things.
Yes.
One of the things that's coming up right now is the 400th anniversary of the gunpowder plot. Guy Fawkes. It was supposedly Guy Fawkes wanting to put gunpowder with his group of Catholic rebels, put gunpowder in the cellar under the House of Lords in 1605 on November 5th and blow up King James I and the British, the English lords and commons, the whole nobility, the Lord Chief Justice and all the rest of this. And of course, this is the same faction, right? Because the people who did this were not these Catholic dupes, patsies, fanatics, double agents, and so forth, right? Guy Fawkes and his friends. But the author of the plot was the Prime Minister, Lord Robert Cecil, the Lord Salisbury later on, the founder of a faction in British politics, which is still there. It's called the Conservative Party. But I've done a study about this, which shows, I think, absolutely conclusively that everybody who took part in this gunpowder plot was either a double agent working for Cecil or a dupe or fanatic who was sort of along for the ride with the rest of them. And therefore, the faction that did this is the British U.S. financier faction. At that time, coming onto the world scene, with Venetian sponsorship, a complicated process we could talk about.
So it's been going on for hundreds of years.
It is. The characteristic method of this faction in the on the stage of world history is state-sponsored terrorism, fake plots.
Yeah.
Manufacture plots and use them for political purposes. You can manufacture them and discover them, if that's the way, or in this gunpowder plot, it didn't go off. It was discovered, or 9/11, more desperate, actually make it go off. And now there are two things in terms of current events. First is in Ireland, in the town of Cork, University College Cork, we're going to have, thanks to the Irish 9/11 activist group run by Morgan Stack, we're going to have an all-day conference on the 12th of November. So anybody who's anywhere in the British Isles or Western Europe who wants to drop in, come to Cork, University College Cork, on November 12th, Saturday. It's an all-day conference. The people who are going to be there include Daniel Hopsicker. We're going to have Nafiz Ahmed. We're going to have David Shaler, fascinating guy. He's an MI5 whistleblower.
Okay.
And the most recent thing from David Shaler is that Tony Blair was working for MI5 as a spy against the peace movement back in the 1980s.
Oh, wow.
So Tony Blair is a spy. And the other thing from David Shaler, of course, is that he shows how MI6 paid al-Qaeda to try to kill Muammar Gaddafi of Libya. And the scenario was if al-Qaeda had succeeded in killing Gaddafi and maybe taking over Libya briefly, then that would have been a pretext for the U.S. and the British to invade. So that was 9/11 before 9/11. This was back in the mid-1990s. And Annie Matchin, they've got a book. Let me mention their book, too. So it's called Spies, Lies, and Whistleblowers, MI5, MI6, and the Shaler Affair by Annie Matchin, with David Shaler as one of her main sources. And Phil Berg being the lawyer for William Rodriguez, this is one of the few legal avenues being pursued against the 9/11 cover-up. So that's news at that level. So the other thing, I just have to end with a plea to please look for my book, 9/11 Synthetic Terror. I urge you to buy it on Amazon. If you go to Amazon, you can get it together with the Bush biography 1992, reprinted. You can get all that for less than $30, and they waive the shipping. And if you buy it through Amazon, you've done me a favor, because that will help me to get into bookshops. And finally, if you wanted to get the analysis on July 7th in London, there's an edition, the current edition of Global Outlook magazine from Canada, which is available in Borders bookshops.
Oh, really?
All right. Go to the magazine section of Borders Books. It's important to buy this because this is the only critical anti-regime, it's the only one that has the truth on 9/11, but also on a whole bunch of other things, globalization and militarization. It's actually Ian Woods and Barry Zwicker up in Canada put it out. The magazine has an upgraded format. The production values in the magazine are much better. You can keep them. They're practically permanent. Right? You can keep them. It's more like a paperback book, a large paperback than just a throwaway magazine. So I have an article in there on how the London 7/7 bombings took place. There's a whole bunch of other stuff. It's a large magazine full of things. But people have got to go to Borders Books and buy it. Because, they have to see that they sell it so that they keep carrying it.
Exactly, yeah.
So that's an important thing you can do for the movement and for anybody writing on any of the themes that we've talked tonight. About tonight.
Well, thank you very much. I tried my best to keep up with you. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. I'll get the interview out as fast as I can, actually. I'll try.
Delighted to do it. Maybe we talk again in a couple of months.
Thanks to Webster Charpley for sitting down and talking to us for Banal of America Audio special session. I want to thank Leslie and Chiron for their help with Banal of America Audio, and I want to thank all you great listeners out there in Banal of America Audio land. Until you hear from me again, this is Tim Banal, signing off.